hearts of a love very nasty. Posey no asterane no. Hearts of a love very nasty. Posey no asterane no. Hearts of a love very nasty. Posey no asterane no. Hearts of a love very nasty. Se posei no asterane no, ayana ana Hashem, ayana Hashem, oishiyano, ana ana Hashem, atzlichano, ayayayana ana Hashem, ayana Hashem, oishiyano, ana ana Hashem.
Well, shalom, and welcome to another 2 hours of Jewish soul music. I'm your host, Charlie Bernhout. This is show number 413 for November 13th, 2017. By now you're aware, I'm presently in Israel. Spent Chaye Sarah in Hebron, and this is going to be a special dedicated to my dear friend, the 1 year yahrzeit of Bensian Shenker. I'm sure you're all aware of my love for him and his music. He was special, his music was very special, and it was a great loss for the Jewish world and the world of Jewish music. Absolutely. I had the honor to have Bensian come to my studio at that time in 1994. It's 23 years ago. I had a two-hour program from Seton Hall University, and as I say, I was honored that Bensian came with his wife to the studio, and we did the first of two-hour specials. The second special was done in 2011, and I will play that, repeat that sometime in the near future. So without any further ado, let's go to that interview that took place 23 years ago. As I mentioned, Bensian was 69 years old at the time. Good evening, Bensian Shenker.
Good evening.
I'm so honored and proud to have you here in the studio with us.
I'm honored to be here.
Well, there are so many of our audience who are great fans of yours, as I am, and this is certainly a special 2 hours that we're going to be listening to your music and hear a little bit about your life and how you became interested in music. And why don't we get right to it? I understand you were born in Brooklyn, so how does a Brooklyn boy get involved with Hasidic music in the 30s?
Right. Well, it started actually with synagogue music before the Hasidic music. As a child, well, I always showed a lot of musical promise or...
You were a wunderkind? Were you one of those?
I don't know if I can call him a wunderkind. Uh-huh. But I did sing in a synagogue choir.
Where was that?
That was in Brooklyn. Uh-huh. The choir leader and also cantor, he was both a choir leader and a cantor, was at that time a very popular person by the name of Yeshua Weiser. He was a prolific composer. He wrote a lot of chazanos. There are many books that he has published of chazanos, and he was also a teacher of chazanim. He had like a private school where he taught chazanim. Uh-huh. As a child, it seems he once attended the shul that we attended, our family, and he heard me sing, and he was very, very excited, and he told my father that he'd like very much for me to join his choir as a alto soloist.
Right. He didn't kidnap you, as I hear they used to do in the old days.
Not exactly. Yeah, that was after the Lindbergh case, I think that was out. At any rate, I remember joining the choir, coming to rehearsals, and he wrote solos for me. Some of them were actually written for my voice at the time. I had like sort of a mezzo alto, not a high alto. Mm-hmm. And I also possessed a coloratura, which was very unique for a young child. And he used to go crazy over it.
Now, we don't have any recordings of those. I know we have one.
I do have a recording. I made that when I was 13 years old.
Oh, 13. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes, we did play it once before, and I understand we're going to be playing it
this evening. In fact, Weiser composed a song that I sang there, the Alte Chazan, which was recorded by many chazanim after that.
Yes.
And he also accompanied me on the piano at this recording, which is also something unique.
Yes.
I actually sang in his choir until I was about 15 or 15 and a half years, until about 15. And as my voice kept changing, he kept writing the solos and different keys, you know.
He didn't kick you out.
He didn't want to kick me out. He wanted to keep me going.
Right.
Yes. I remember one distinct thing that I remember very vividly was the first concert that we sang. It was, I believe, there was a shul called the Pennsylvania Avenue Talmud Torah in Brownsville.
Uh-huh.
And this was a concert that I believe there were four chazanim there. I'm trying to remember the names. Now, one of them was David Reutman.
Wow.
And he was at that, this was, we're talking about 1938 now, mm-hmm. or maybe 37 possibly. He, at that point, I think was on his way down. I believe he was an elderly man already. But he still presented a nice program. And there was another chazan by the name of Kretschmar. I don't know if you ever heard of
him. I have his recordings, yes.
There was also chazan Kachko.
I have Kachko also.
Yeah. Yes. They all three, and Weiser. Weiser led the choir and sang also, I believe, and they each sang solos with the choir. Now, we did a piece of Hallel where I did a solo for Mikimi. That was the first piece of Hallel. And that was the first time I sang with the choir. It was very interesting. And I was very short, and I put it on a pedestal, you know. And
yes.
And everybody sort of got up, you know, trying to see who's this kid that's singing over there. And one of the people that got up was David Reitman. He got up and took a square look at me, like, you know, and really gave me a good
look over. Right.
And then when the concert was over, he walked up to the choir stand, you know, and said, Shike, that's what he called the Weiser. Shike Weiser, he says, where the Jingles are gizing? Who's this little boy that sang? So he points to me. So he comes over and he says, gives me a big, you know, knip in the back, you know. And he says, oh, there's so much wax now, Kayla. You're going to grow up to be somebody. He says, that was my first encounter with
He had the great foresight.
Well, and I always remember this incident. It was really something.
Now, I recall around that time, just a couple of years after, the Mojisser Rebbe came to this country.
Yes, that was 1940.
Now, how did you make contact with him and that he had such a great influence on you? I mean, were you involved with Mojisser before?
Not really, but my father was a chassid, a Polish chassid. Mm-hmm. In other words, he knew very much of Mojisser because actually my father's town wasn't too far from Mojisser. In fact, I think that my father's town had people that were married to people in his town who came from Mojisser. So he had that exposure to it. And I remember the Rebbe arrived, I believe, like Wednesday during the weekend. Friday night he conducted a tish. You know, a mm-hmm. Rebbe conducts a tish, right, in one of the shuls in Williamsburg at the time. That's where he made his residence in Williamsburg. And we didn't live in Williamsburg. We lived like sort of in the outskirts, Bedford-Stuyvesant. I don't know if you know Brooklyn.
Of course. Yeah. You know, I'm an old real estate boy.
Yeah. I remember our shul had a lot of Polish Jews that attended our shul. So we all decided to walk down to the Tisch. And this was, must have been at least 15 or 20 people that walked down for about a half hour or so.
In those days, you didn't have to worry about walking on the streets.
No. And we all attended that Tisch, and we were all very inspired. It was very friendly. First of all, you know, the Rebbe came, was a refugee. He just escaped from the Nazis. Yes.
How old was he about that?
At that time, he was, I believe, 54. Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although he looked much older. He has gone through quite a bit at the time. His beard was completely white. I mean, he looked much older. And I remember being very inspired by that particular Tisch, but there was no contact really at that point. About 2 months later, the Rebbe was invited to a shul in our neighborhood in Bedford-Stuyvesant. Uh-huh. So there, I became very, very friendly, very Hamish. And it's interesting. My father was invited to eat at the meal in the home that he was staying.
Uh-huh.
Whereas we were children, myself, my brother, we were young children, so we were told to go home and make kiddush for my mother and come back, you know. And when I came back to the Saturday afternoon at the Tisch, the Rebbe was sitting in the dining room there and with the minion, let's say, and there was I noticed a book in back of him on the couch, a book that was called La Chassida Mizmar, written by somebody by the name of Gishuri, an Israeli writer. And there was notations of melodies, some Majus melodies, some other melodies. And I just, as I was leafing through the book, I just started singing it. I was able to read. And the Rebbe just couldn't get over it. He says, oh, little pipsqueak over there. And he reads as if nothing ever happened. So he says, "What? Let me hear. So I kept going on, you know.
Yes.
And he was so impressed. He says, "Where did you learn how to read that way?" So I said, well, I was studying with Weiser at the time. I was studying with some others, with Seymour Silberman. I don't know if you know.
Yes, of course.
You know,
I'm sure you know. Recording. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. He wasn't much older than I was at the time, but he was teaching at the time.
He's still in Great Neck.
Sure.
Yes. Right.
Yeah. He was teaching at the time. Uh-huh. He taught me theory, piano, really? And everything else.
So he heard.
And the Rebbe heard
this,
and
yes.
He says, he told me to keep on singing, and he was so impressed. And this is really my first contact with Majid's. And, of course, later it was a very close contact because I used to notate all of his compositions.
Mm-hmm.
The Rebbe did not read or write music.
Just did you record it and then?
There was no such thing as recording at the time. There was
so
no
you had to
recorded.
Do it strictly by ear?
Yeah, well, I used to listen and I used to...
Fantastic.
In fact, I was responsible for Weiser coming down to the Rebbe and notating some of the very complicated pieces that he had. Weiser did a lot of... Weiser later included in some of his books.
Mm-hmm.
There were quite a few pieces that were included in his books.
That's fascinating.
Yes.
We'll get back to more on the next stages with your recordings, but right now we have set up to hear, I believe it's, is this the Yiddish selection?
The Yiddish selection, yes. That I recorded when I was 13 years old, and this is Weiser's Der Alte Chazen.
Okay, and this is really a classic now. I think we played this, we did play this, a couple of years ago, but it's new for most of us.
It was recorded in a studio on Second Avenue, and Weiser, who was the composer of the piece, was also my accompanist.
That's yeah. Great. Okay. Coming right up, this is Bensian Schenker at the age of 13.
Oh,
That was fantastic. Going back to 1938. Wow, that's real history.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned to you that Weiser had a very interesting choir. I mean, among the people that sang in the choir was also a fellow by the name of Richard Tucker.
Richard Tucker.
And he got his first start in Chazonus, I believe, with Weiser.
Really?
Yes. I don't know whether he studied any place else after that, but that's where he got his start in Chazonus.
That was Cantor Weiser who was playing the piano for you.
Yes.
Fabulous. Yeah. If we only had more sophisticated recording equipment today, everybody records their children and their grandchildren.
Right. I wish I would have recorded more of myself at that point, because I really did very little.
That was magnificent. Mm. What do you have on board for next next selection?
I did a... let's put it this way. Weiser once told my parents when I came into the choir and when he was... try to tell him how what he expects of me. He said, well, no, he's going to grow up to be a Pinchik. That was his way of saying, you know, I'll probably be a great cousin someday,
right?
Which is not true, of course, but anyway. But I tried to emulate Pinchik to a certain extent, and I did hear him live. I heard him at least once, I remember, and he sang Rosa de Shabbos live, besides the fact that, of course, everybody hears it on the recordings.
Yes.
So in the 50s, I recorded Rosa de Shabbos for myself, not for publication.
Okay.
But I have it over here.
Okay. So this is a not professionally recorded,
right.
But
right.
Like taking a recorder at your home, and so we're forewarned.
Right.
And this is Pinchik's version?
Pinchik's Rosa de Shabbos.
Rosa de Shabbos.
Akruima
We're getting our recordings straight. That was You, at the ripe young age of about 27, singing Rosa de Chavez as Pinchuk's Rosa de Chavez.
Correct.
And now, you had such a beautiful voice at that time. Why didn't you go into Chazonis? I mean, I guess you have to be crazy to go into Chazonis. Yeah, I know the answer to that, but I'm curious. You must have had a lot of pressure to do that.
It's true, but I never really wanted to make Chazonis a livelihood, put it that way. I never wanted to make a livelihood out of music, period. This is actually only a hobby as far as I was concerned. And when you go to Chazonis, you certain restrictions. I mean, davening in Chazonis, there are many restrictions, really. You have to repeat words, which we don't do in our group. You know, there are many different things that they're not completely according to the halacha.
So you like being a free spirit.
Right.
By the way, that's one reason why I love doing the show. Some people say to me, why don't you do a commercial radio show? Which, every once in a while you say, well, maybe. But then you're restricted. Here I have such freedom, and I'm so grateful.
And you're enjoying yourself.
Yes.
Because once you do it as a profession, you're not really enjoying it anymore, you know?
Well, hopefully some are. But you and I know, well, it's a wonderful thing to be able to pursue something that brings so much joy.
Correct.
And, of course, all your albums, the joy of the festivals and the joy of Shabbos and so forth, they have brought so much joy to all of us. Now, this first album, which I have it here in my hand, which I understand is a collector's item, Mojitzer's Malava Malka Melodies, and I see that the arrangements were by Herbert Rothgarber, piano accompanied by Elliot Birnbaum, and Stamler from Collectors Guild was the technical director on that. This was your first album.
True.
Tell us about
See, we never really thought that we can come out with an album. I mean, it was like at that point, you know, there was very few recordings of, especially of Hasidic music. There was nothing at all. In fact, that was really, ours was really the first try at it. Benedict Stambler was also a neighbor of mine in Crown Heights.
Uh-huh.
We lived at that point in Crown Heights. And we had a Mojitza shul or shtibel in Crown Heights. And he used to come in like as a sort of innocent bystander, you know. He used to come to Shalosh Shudas, the third meal.
Mm-hmm.
And he would sit there every Shabbos. There was a guy sitting there and just listening and singing along and never identified himself. And we didn't really know who he was. But he was really a neighbor in the, I mean, not too far from where we were. Where I lived or where I davened.
Uh-huh.
And then one day, after about a couple of months, he comes over to me after Meyerov and he says, you know, you have such beautiful melodies you sing here. Why don't you record them?
This is Stambler?
Stambler, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I say, you know, it's true. I mean, we would like to record them, but we have no way of doing it. We don't know how to go about it. So he says, I have all the know-how. I mean, as far as that goes, I know exactly what to do and where to go. And I have... And together with his wife, he's not alive anymore. Mm-hmm. His wife still is. In fact, his wife writes a column for the Jewish Week.
Oh, really?
Yes, I remember her.
Under the name of Stamler?
No, she has a different name.
Oh,
she's remarried. She lives in Florida.
I see.
Yeah, I can't recall the name right now.
Oh, because
in fact, I did contact her recently because I was looking for something which I thought maybe she would know about, and. We listened, and then we got, as time went on, you know, we started listening more seriously, and we started rehearsing. You know, first we had to pick the melodies, and then we started rehearsing. He took us into a rehearsal studio at one point.
Now, how many were in the choir? There was a whole group here.
There was a group. I think they're all listed there, in fact.
Uh-huh.
In fact, one of the people in that choir was Velvet Pasnak. I don't know if you realize that.
No, I didn't. I didn't realize that. Yeah, and I hope he's listening. You know, we called him from my car on the way here.
Yes,
Velvel, why don't you pick up the phone and call us?
Yes, he was singing. I mean, at that point, he was still studying in the YU, and he davened in our shul, in fact.
Really?
Sure.
He lived in
Crown Heights, sure.
Yeah. How about that?
He was a Hamish boy.
By the way, Velvel, the phone number here is 201-761-9768. That's 201 761-9768. If you're listening, give us a call. Mm-hmm. So he davened with you
and with us, and he was a part of the choir. And then, of course, later, when we did some of our other ventures, he was actually the conductor of the choir. He wrote some of the arrangements, choir arrangements. Sure, on our Margits of Favorites, he was already working as a...
Yes, you see his name on all of these recordings. As a matter of fact, if those of who are into Chazonis or into Jewish music know that Velvel is a one-man music man for the Jewish people. I mean, mm-hmm. He has published so many books on Jewish music.
Yeah, he has,
and it's for posterity, really. Right. He has a mission. You know, he has a sense of mission.
He has a lot of my compositions in his books.
Yes,
occasions of yes. In fact, his father, who just passed away past year, was close to Mudgetts too, from Europe yet.
Really? Yes. You know, so, as we hear, it gets closer and closer.
It's all one little family, you know.
Yes.
And we did this Mlava Malka in 1956, that was. And it took a long time before we came out. We were able to actually go down to the studio. You know, we were all amateurs.
Right.
And, I mean, although we all sang well, but, you know, it has to gel. And I remember we were rehearsing in at my home or in the home of some of the other members. And that's after the record, after I think we started, from the time we started until the time we actually produced the record, I think it was almost a year.
Uh-huh. Well, this really was a forerunner of the great wave of Hasidic music.
It was
music
a breakthrough because really this was the first Hasidic record that ever came out.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, later Kalbach came and then Lubavitch and then Ger. I mean, but that all mm-hmm. followed, you know.
Now, this piece that we're going to hear is something that you composed in 1943.
Correct, yes. One of my very early compositions. And I recorded it on this record. Or Hamavdil.
Hamavdil. Okay, so let's hear from the first album, Mojitzer Mlava Malka Melodies, that was published in 1956, written in 1943 by Cantor Rabbi Vincian Schenker.
Oh,
That's beautiful. That's historic.
Historic, right.
By the way, we were talking on the way here that I was bemoaning the fact that there is very little Jewish programming for the Jewish community in terms of radio. Of course, there's nothing in television, virtually nothing. And you were pointing out that when you were young, you used to sing on Jewish radio.
Correct. I used to have a weekly program, 15-minute or half-hour program. I don't remember myself. but I used to, there were at that point, there were many Jewish stations.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they were most of them were located in downtown Brooklyn. I think
where else? Where
I think there was the Fox Theater or something.
Uh-huh.
On do you remember Fox Theater? There were a couple of studios in that building there.
Uh-huh.
And I used to it's very interesting. I attended the Masifta at the time, and I was in my first class of the high school.
Right.
And my Rebbe at that point was Rabbi Palm, who is now the Rosh Yeshiva of the Masifta. And when I meet him to this very day, he always reminds me, he says, do you remember, he says, when you used to go out of class at 10 o'clock Sunday morning and come back 11:30 after you sang? I would used to leave the class at 10 o'clock, and then at about 11, I would take the trolley, you know, from Williamsburg to downtown Brooklyn and do my little stint there for 15 minutes or whatever it is.
That's great.
And come back to school after.
we should only have recordings of the
I wish
the
they
late
were recordings.
30s, yes.
I wish they were recordings. I at that point, I used to do a lot of Yiddish songs, a little bit of Chazanus.
Uh-huh.
And it was really Wiser that would prepare me for these radio programs.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Now, today I got a report that from several people that in Morristown at the Rabbinical College, they had a magnificent gathering for the Renaissance Fair. And Avram Fried was the lead singer, and my friend Orna Young and others have told me that it was a wonderful, wonderful day, a great crowd, and the music was wonderful. This is the first time that I had to miss it. I had to make a choice. And my wife went out this year, so that's why many of you didn't see me there. But I'll be there, God be willing, next year. Now, the reason we're talking about Avram Fried is that our next selection will be Avram.
A version of Avdil, which is sung by Avram Fried.
But was written
it's
your version.
It's the same composition, of
course. And for those of you who are at the college, let's hear Avram Fried one more time tonight.
Love, I love, I love.
That's a beautiful version of your selection, Hamavdil. The Joy of Sabbath album came out, I see, in 1965.
1960, I believe.
Well, okay, and but one of your selections that you wrote in honor of a young woman who is sitting next to you, and let's dedicate it to her.
Eishes Chayil.
Eishes Chayil.
I say this is a melody that has become very, very popular. I mean, I very often go home from Shul Shabbos Friday night, and I, you know, you pass many open windows, especially this time of the year,
yes.
And you hear from different houses people singing Eishes Chayil. And, you know, when I walk past and I hear this, it's a big source of pride, you know.
Certainly, and I'm very pleased that your wife is here so that we can dedicate it to her.
Last week we attended a wedding, and it seems that this has become a sort of a tradition now by the weddings where the boys of the yeshiva sing Eishes Chayil for the chasen kala.
The serenader.
Right. Yeah, in the middle of all the dancing, they just stop. And they all start singing Eishes Chayil.
And they give you a break from all that loud music someday. That's great. So let's hear this magnificent version from the Joy of a Sabbath album. This was a chorus conducted by Velvel Pasternak, and I see that the musical settings were by Vladimir Heifetz.
Correct.
Eishes Chayil coming.
Eishes Chayil mi yimitzu v'rachayk mipninim michero botach ebolei v'palo ay v'sholol lo yechesa Olaso etoim v'lo yiro kol imecha yeyo dorisho tzemer ufishtim v'tas b'chefetz kapeyo Oy, so konni, oy, so ki tu vir lachmo patu kami oir lairu patit in tel vel plebeiso di choi glinar oiseo zome mo zore vitiko heiu mi pricha peion no to correu chogi robi ois mos neiu Soras hesed Ali shoye no tsoy fiyo Ali chois beisu Leche matzirus Lohoi soy chay Om ova neyo vi ashrua Palo Vi halilo Rabois bonnois Osu choyil Vi atoli Sale curono
version of Esh Yisrael. Now you wrote this.
Yes.
And what happened to all these selections that you've written? I mean, are they in an anthology? We have the recordings, but if somebody wanted to perform them, I'm not sure.
Yes.
Where do they stand?
Well, many of these have been notated by Velvel Pasternak,
uh-huh.
Yes, and he included them in some of his publications. I mean, those that have became very popular, of course. Esh Yisrael is there, and this next piece that we're talking about, Mizmor LaDavid,
uh-huh.
Which became unusually popular throughout the ages. I mean, when I say the ages, I'm talking about since this recording. The Mizmor LaDavid was composed in 1946, and very interesting. I visited Eretz Yisrael, which was at that point was not called Israel; it was called Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
In 1946.
Mm-hmm.
I accompanied my father, who wanted to see the country, and also wanted to see his brother, who he hadn't seen since he left for America in 1920.
Wow!
So, and this was his brother came to Israel in 1935. And this was 1946. It was after the war, and they started to rebuild. And we took that, I think it was the first ship that left New York Harbor for Palestine at the time. Nobody took a plane in those days.
Sure.
And I spent about 5 months in Eretz Yisrael at that time. In fact, I was contemplating remaining there to study,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't mm-hmm. pursue it.
Were you married at the time?
No. I was a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I accomplished being in Eretz Yisrael was to compose this following Mizmor LaDavid, which it became unusually accepted both in Eretz Yisrael and throughout the world. In fact, I very often hear that somebody says, I was in Hong Kong and I was in Shabbos and in this and this shul and I heard singing Your Miserable David.
That's wild. Of course, this is The Lord is My Shepherd, the 23rd Psalm. This is also on the Joy of the Sabbath album.
Right.
Let's hear Mizmor David.
Charlie, I have to tell you a little story about this Miserable Dove. About 20 years ago, we visited one of the mountain resorts. We were there for a weekend or for a week or two, whatever it is. And Motzoi Shabbos, which is the end of the Sabbath, a few people organized a little get-together, a little Malava Malka. And I joined them also.
Did they know who you were at the time?
People didn't know. People didn't know. Some did know. That's part of the story.
Okay.
Anyway, so they asked an older gentleman, asked him to sing something. He was most probably he was considered a menagin or a singer. Mm-hmm. And he sang this melody for something else, wasn't for Miserable Dove. And I just sort of helped him along, you know. I harmonized with him and so forth. Right. And right in the middle of the thing, he stops and says, "Junger Mann," he says, "don't make me mach nicht kalt, but don't spoil it for me." So if people around, you know, those that knew who I was, started laughing. He says, "Well, what's all the laugh about?" So he said, "He's the guy who composed the melody." He says, "I know this song 60 years already." This is a true story.
That's great. And I'm sure that's great. Well, look, we're approaching 9 o'clock, and we're going to be coming up to the second hour of 2 Hours of Jewish Soul. If you've tuned in late, well, by now you know that we have with us in the studio so pleased and proud that Ben Ziyanshenker is with us, sharing his thoughts, his history, how he became involved with Jewish music. And during the second hour, of course, we'll hear more of his beautiful recordings and his thoughts on Jewish music. We're here at WSOU.